Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
On the street.
Information does anybody need?
On the air.
What to watch?
On Point of View.
As we welcome Leroy Mark, and of course welcoming the weekend as well at the same time.
Hi. Big weekend. You know, weekend in Kulukele. Big weekend.
Big weekend. Absolutely. So I'm sure you can see that the big planes are also arriving.
So I was very interested to find out, did you hear a lot of the helicopters and the fighter jets early on during the day? So that's how I knew something was going on, because there was lots of air traffic, and now there's all these jumbo jets landing.
Yes.
Oh, very, very fancy.
It's very busy. So we are going to have to behave ourselves.
Yes.
We must be in our best behavior.
Yes. Yes,
and make sure that we see the weekend through nicely.
Got visitors. Yes, so
best foot forward.
Please, living nicely to all the people who are coming and not coming.
For those who are not going to be at the G20, what are we watching?
Oh, for us who won't be having high-level meetings with world leaders, there are some interesting things going on. Where would you like to start?
Sure, the carpenter's son.
Yeah, I didn't...
Me of... What was it, Mel Gibson's one?
Passion of the Christ. Mm. Yeah, so this is meant to be some sort of like biblical thriller, and it really falls flat, because what we're doing here is we're seeing So first and foremost, what really intrigued me about The Carpenter's Son is that it euphemistically uses every single word in the dictionary but the words to name Jesus,
yes,
Mary, and
course.
Joseph.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's copyright issues there, if the good book doesn't, you know, allow us to, you know, use the names outside of
well,
the good book.
The imagery does it for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because we've got Nicolas Cage playing the role of Joseph, Jesus's erstwhile dad, and we've got Mary coming in as well. But what's very interesting is you start to see this very interesting relationship developing, because we're seeing Jesus at the age when he is around 15, so as a teen.
Yeah.
And we seem to be actually quite a rebellious teenager. Mm. Now, the issue here is that because of the context of it being the story of Jesus, even though they don't mention it, everything that's done sort of will draw the ire of Christians around the world. But I think look at it as a literary work of how we're trying to figure out what was happening at that time. It's not meant to be factual. It is fictional. And so that should be the spirit it should be viewed at. I found it very interesting because it was pitted as a religious thriller.
Mm.
That it was meant to be the scene of horror where you start seeing Jesus interacting with a figure of Lucifer who's trying to gain his trust. And
consciousness
and his consciousness, and also him discovering his powers in inverted commas, and then what he does as he grows up into the Jesus that we knew in his early 30s when he was crucified. I found it interesting from that point of view, because it's been interesting to imagine this human being who is, you know, ostensibly the Son of God. And he must have had some formative years, right? He must have been interested in a girl. He must have been, drawn to women or not. But there has to have been some sort of story around him. And what this story of the carpenter tells is that we've got also quite a few questions we've asked, because, you know, the whole story about Immaculate Conception is such that we're worried about, like, what would happen if this was happening in modern day. There'd be stories, are you cheating on me, Mary? Were you saying this child is mine? How did this happen? So those doubts are played out. But it does also do a lot to coloring in what could have been the story of childhood Jesus. So I enjoyed that part of it. But apart from that, there was lots of bits and bobs that seemed, because they were avoiding being explicit about mentioning, you know, Mel Gibson's one was bad, because Mel Gibson actually just called it out.
Mel Gibson's the parallels for me, or the comparison, has to do with the level of violence.
Yeah.
And there is a sense I get that this was a film that was desperate to fit into a particular culture right now. You and
Absolutely.
I have been talking a lot about this thriller wave. It's been around with us for a long time, and I got the sense that it's doing everything possible to fit into that kind of a genre.
Mm.
So I'm not sure the level of violence was necessary. That's just me.
Yeah.
I think they could have been a bit more elegant with telling the story.
Yeah.
Because I got the feeling the violence detracted from the story they were trying to tell.
I also think they didn't know how to process it.
Because they were busy trying to be a thriller.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that's where they lost it. In other words, I have absolutely no problem with artistic license. I really have no problem with it. You can go all there, but it's difficult to do all things at the same time.
And that was the issue.
That's the issue. And it's a complicated subject. It's the kind of subject that's going to get people riled up. It's going to get people angry. I can already see how people are going to be. There will be protests. If people were not busy with Trump, I can tell you now, there would have been protests everywhere. But I think we've got other problems.
And they were aware of it because they couldn't shoot in Egypt. They had to shoot in Greece to avoid, you know, all the follow around it. And I think they realized that they did a disservice to it because I sat there and the movie doesn't seem high budget at all.
Yeah,
and so I was wondering. So why do we need Nicolas Cage then? Because is he the tactic to bring?
We wanted to do what we did with Mel Gibson. So I just personally found it to be, as I said, I have no problem with artistic license. You know, push us, make us think a little bit and all of that. The only crisis here was that they tried to do too much with the so the one person starts having an idea and then no one stops the other from going too wild with the idea.
It felt like it was
someone had to rein somebody in.
It felt like there was no cohesion. Yeah. It felt like someone was writing one part of it.
And they were all playing.
Yeah.
They were all living their wildest dreams. Omong ona ya aretsis fapano. Aya aretsi ya let's
khala ingi nani.
Kenya snake said. So I'm thinking, okay, I get you, but you are throwing in too much at the same time. You could have allowed us to process it. I wouldn't even have minded having a sequel.
Yeah.
But also, just gentler, ne? Just easy does it. Easy does it.
But I also think that, I think the other thing that they miss out, which I found to be very important in any religious thriller, right? Whether it's, you know, the Exorcism of Emily Rhodes or all the other ones, that you also have to have a moment for us to digest the complexity.
That's exactly it. They didn't give us enough time to take it in, sit with it, and think. Because do you not want the audience to engage with it? But I felt like they had gone all so wild. They didn't even want us to bring in the little pieces. You were not given room to think about it.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, so if you want us to engage with the text or the film, why don't you allow us to be a part of this conversation? They didn't give us room to do that.
Because I think they realized that the story was weak. I think they realized that they used every device. And I think Nicolas Cage was the hook that was meant to sell it. And unfortunately for him, we get aggro dad as opposed to, you know.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Leroy, it fell flat in every respect.
Yeah.
So of course there are people who are going to be upset because you don't touch religion.
Yes.
And that's fine. That's expected. But I think, well, it wasn't even worth it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking, you didn't even achieve, you know, I can't even root for you did such a bad job.
So that was the community of reviewers said the same thing, that if you're going to go and offend, offend properly.
Yeah,
don't sort of half offend, because I'm offended that you don't try.
You know what I mean? And so you've offended the religion, and now you offended the artists, and now you've offended the viewers, and now you got us irritated.
And I don't like you.
Then we don't like you anymore.
So I think do watch it for the critical acclaim, so you can see where our position is. Maybe we're wrong.
I certainly will not be. I certainly will not fault anyone who's going to walk out early.
Yeah,
because I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, park
people are going to walk away early. They're going to be like, no, you know what? Actually, no.
Yeah, I'll park close to the entrance so you can make a quick getaway. It's called The Carpenter's Son. It's been out since the 14th of November.
Surat was interesting.
Surat was very interesting. And for me, so this, when it previewed at Cannes, it won a prize. So it won.
Surat was compelling.
Very compelling. Yeah. I think this is one of my favorite movies for the year. And I really went in not caring for it.
Yeah, no, Surat
I wasn't
was
bothered.
Compelling.
I wasn't looking to be intrigued. And I left there going, I was very surprised with how dark it became. Because, whoa.
Yeah. But it takes you on the journey.
It does.
You see, it doesn't do what this does. This carpenter's. It doesn't just throw you in jail with things.
Yeah.
It takes you on the journey. So yes, you find yourself at the end feeling like, yo, How do we get here?
Yeah.
But you were gently taken there.
And it's heavy with you.
It's heavy with you.
The story is about, you know, Sergio Lopez, who he and his son are in Morocco. And it seems like there's a World War III happening. Mm. There's some sort of global conflict that's happening. And everyone is met in Morocco to have a rave, right?
Yeah, the benefit concerts type
of thing. Yes, yes. Our global citizen and so forth. But here, they've lost the sister to the young brother, and the daughter obviously to the dad. So he and the son are there to try and find this young lady who was on this rave at some point. And so we find out that they split because
there's more than one.
There's more than one rave.
Yeah.
And so there's this team of sort of misfits that's going with them, saying, "Okay, cool. We think she might be at the next rave, so let's go together." And between that and the next rave, if they ever get to it, a lot happens, and you see this very, very dark story, especially because it's set in the desert. It will take in highs and lows. I was on the edge of my seat more than I had to, but also you start seeing just the weirdness of grief, right? Like how it just strikes you to the point where you almost want to be out of your body to be able to process
it. It's deep.
It's very deep.
Yeah, it's very deep. It's deep and it's thoughtful.
I enjoyed the cinematography.
Yeah, oh, it's beautiful.
I really did.
Oh, it's beautiful. Not in the conventional beautiful way, if that makes any sense. But the the DP did a good job.
Yeah,
the director of photography did a fantastic, fantastic job. And obviously, a lot of that work went in at post production. But
absolutely,
it was so respectful.
Yeah.
So respectful.
And I think, and this is the thing, right? Once you watch the movie, you'll realize that there's so many avenues to have made it camp and cheesy, and there were so many ways it could have gone wrong. And I think this is the difference between what Nicolas Cage's movie did and versus this, is that you can tell when a team is sort of aware of the idea and they all walk. And
there's
work,
a lot of depth here.
Lots.
And including, as you're saying, even the, what I would say is the director of photography and all the other creatives that were in this. There's a lot of depth.
Yeah.
Well thought out. Everybody came to think through what they were doing.
I found it to be enchanting. And
didn't you feel like it must have taken long? Do you know how long it took to do it?
I have no idea how long it took. I know that it was, I think a year and a bit, if I'm not mistaken.
It feels like they took their time to craft this beautiful piece of art. That's what it feels
and,
like.
And I also enjoyed that it wasn't the conventional sort of English thriller, it was fantastic.
So then, if there's something authentic, I mean, whatever that means, but
the A word.
It's S-I-R-A-T, guys.
Yes. Right. And you have to absolutely go watch it.
Yeah, you've got to watch it.
It's the 14th of November.
Sallywood.
Oh, Sallywood. I've always had a dream.
It's adorable.
Whenever people ask me how I'm going to exit this world, I have this idea. So I loved playing the character of Banquo in Macbeth when I was in high school. And that play enchanted me to the point where I think in my next life I'm going to be on Broadway. And
And
in one of the scenes, Banquo gets stabbed. And then I'm going to get stabbed. But then the prop master would have forgotten to use. And I was going to die on Broadway.
Yes.
And this felt like that for me. Yeah. With this big dream.
It's beautiful.
It really was beautiful. And also just, it's silly. And
endearing.
And we all have that one person who really captivated us, right? But in this story we get, so Zach has this, is a young boy. He grows up in a small town. And while he's there, there's a huge fire that happens at the local Blockbuster. You know, this is where you used to rent movies out in VHS. So his dad goes and buys a ton of these things, and he finds this one movie called Anna, where Sally Kirkland is a star, which she was Academy Award nominated for, Golden Globe Award nominated for. So he lives in Maine, and he just gets captivated by this woman. He is in love with her. He's quite young at this time. All the way until he's a grown man and is ready for him to leave the house, and he decides to go to Hollywood to go pursue a career in writing, and also hopefully meet the Sally woman who has been, you know, this figment of his dreams for the longest time. He gets there, he gets to this one diner where he's sitting with this young boy, Tom, who would be his roommate. And when he gets there, they see a picture of Sally on the wall, and they go, does Sally come here? To this one Wimpy or whatever it was, and they say, oh yeah, she just left actually, and he chases after her. And the rest is history. The issue here is there are three very strong storylines that if you're not prepared, you're going to be very overwhelmed. Because there's a story of Sally, who obviously now she's older, she's trying to reinvent her career. Zach becomes the assistant to Sally, and we see how that transpires. And then we have Tom, who lives with Zach, and he is also pursuing a career as a director, as a filmmaker, making this very weird lesbian zombie apocalypse movie. It sounds ridiculous, but it is one of the most heartwarming movies you'll ever watch.
I'll tell you what I loved about it. In this era of social media and fake friendships,
yeah,
what a beautiful story to tell about different kinds of love, different kinds of friendships, different kinds of unions, because we've become so one-dimensional in so many ways. I would love for young people to watch this film, because it will remind them, or at least even introduce them, if they're not, to a kind of relationship you can have with another human if you're not experiencing it and you have not had the privilege of experiencing it, because we are living in a different era where people relate differently.
Absolutely.
You know, a very surface level kind of relationships. This, I think, allows you the possibility of what it can be to relate cross generational kind of relationship, platonic, deep friendship, you know, meaningful, all sorts of wonderful things that can come out of, if you just step outside of your little comfort zone for a minute. How beautiful. Very, very beautiful.
And it's because of access, right? Because, you know, if you think about the social media era, you'd have to be in the space to go find the stars, right?
Yeah.
Like, remember going to Joburg was a thing. Yeah. Going to Hollywood was exactly the same, where dreams are made. And we wouldn't just DM you and you could DM me back. You'd have to actually be in the space to see these people. What's interesting about this is that, unfortunately, when this was released, and it's been released on the 11th of November for the worldwide screening, and the 14th of November in theaters, four people, including Sally herself, passed away.
Yeah. I mean, it makes perfect sense, yeah.
And it just felt like it was almost like them saying,
it
okay,
was meant to be.
We've done our thing now and we walk out. Yeah. I mean, the AD passed away and three of the cast members passed away, including Sally. It really is.
I think it will compel you to search even something as simple as having a good relationship with your grandmother.
Yeah.
It's that for me. You can bring it right back home.
Yeah. And I promise you, you'll find relationships you've had that have made you go, this was one of those. Mm. I mean, I'm thinking about three or four I've had now in my very young years, and going, yeah, I get it. I really get why this was an important piece. Mm. And it's one of my favorites. It's on theaters from the 14th of November.
Okay. So you're probably going to kill me for this. You know, I like books.
Yes.
The Running Man.
Yes.
Is inspired by
a book. Yes. Stephen King.
Not for me.
Not for you. Did you prefer this remake?
So Stephen King hits and misses for me.
Yeah.
And I get it, because he's such a prolific writer. I mean, he releases something. There's something new every
season.
Every cough. Right? So of course, not everything is going to be a hit. This was not a hit for me.
Yeah.
And I think it's okay.
So this is a remake.
Yeah.
Of
an original,
that is taken from a novel. So there was a Stephen King novel, and then there was an Arnold Schwarzenegger version in 1987, and then now we've got this new one with Ben Richards being played by Glenn Powell. So the whole idea here is The Running Man is this weird futuristic society where it's very, I mean, the Gini coefficient there is really high, where you've got the rich are super rich and the poor are super poor. There we find Ben Richards, played by Glenn, who is a dad to a child who we're not sure what the ailment is, but it seems the child is ill, and they make, you know, passes at it being some sort of flu, but we find out that it's something more complicated, more serious. And because of how, you know, the super wealthy and the super poor don't interact, Glenn finds the best way for him to get the money to be able to afford the treatment for his daughter is to get into this show called The Running Man. It is like John Wick mixed up with like The Amazing Race, because you are in the show, but you can go anywhere in the world, and everyone else has a mandate or this contract to kill you, and you must survive. And the longer you survive, the more money you make. And the one phrase they use in the movie is that if he lasts for a week, his family will be part of the 1% who will be able to live out their lives. And so we find him sort of, you know, pushing, and he gets really good at it, right? He's fantastic at evading being killed, but also at the same time he's being chased by these five huntsmen who are sort of contract killers in the game. What you're saying about social media and the complication, this is almost an ode to that, because it shows just how when reality TV sort of gets unhinged, when our dialing into being, you know, chasing ratings, wanting to be the next story that breaks, that will go to the ends of the earth.
Yeah.
And it really is. I think I just enjoyed the fact that it was like, I was looking at Glenn and just saying, okay, just win, just win, and just win. And the ending will be interesting, because it's not what you think.
Yes.
So it's called The Running Man in cinemas as of the 14th of November.
And then the last theater production that you, is it the last theater for the year?
Yeah,
sort of.
Yeah, almost. There's two others coming, and I might be going to one next Sunday.
Okay.
Just want to double check that. But this one is not a light, easy one.
Mm-hmm.
It's in theaters from yesterday all the way to the 22nd of November, so it's a very limited run. It's at the Joburg Theater, and basically it is a play called Far Gone, where a story about how a young man was kidnapped by the LRA, with the Lord's Resistance Army, in northern Uganda. And he tells the story in this wonderfully tragic and comedic way, where he sort of chronicles his story while it's there. It's absolutely captivating. But I also have to say that there is a run of the ballet Giselle at the Baxter Theatre in Cape Town for our Cape Townian listeners. So if you get a moment, please make sure that if you're up in Joburg, go and see Far Gone. If you're down in Cape Town, go check out Giselle the ballet.
Thank you, Leroy. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.